You were listening to episode 49 of the Sunday Shakeout, featuring a discussion on individualized training for peak performance. Hello and welcome to the Sunday Shakeout. I am your host, Nicholas. This episode features a talk on how to train in a way that fits you the best as an individual so that you can get the best results possible in the sport of running. I'm here to shed some light on a topic that is vastly overlooked in this great sport that we all enjoy. I will be delving into science versus real-world application, my personal experiences in training, especially with long runs, a fun little story about a guy who figured out how to breed the best results with seemingly skeptical training, and some advice that you can use and apply to your own training. Now, you might be asking, why would I talk about individualized training? Well, runners, gaining the ability to balance science with your own intuition is key to achieving your best results. Therefore, the goal of this episode is to equip you guys with the skills necessary to train in a way that works best for you and breeds the best results possible. If you are new to the Sunday Shakeout, let me give you a quick rundown. This show is your go-to source for in-depth training analysis, viable training tips, unbiased and reliable physiology and science, and so much more. Whether you're a beginner taking your first strides or an experienced runner aiming for new heights, the Sunday Shakeout provides you with the information you need to run faster, stay injury-free, and most importantly, stay happy on your running journey. So let's lace up those shoes, hit the road, and dive into the world of training that suits you best. Without further ado, please enjoy my guide to optimizing your own personalized training. Now, on this podcast, I've often talked about many different methods of training. I've talked about, threshold, VO2 max, building your endurance, zone 2 like last week. And I've also talked about a lot about the science behind these things, right? Like why threshold works, why VO2 max works, why, building your endurance is important, why zone 2 is critical. But here's the thing, science isn't the whole picture. I may have made it sound like that in many of my previous episodes, like, oh, zone 2, look at this fat oxidation, you got mitochondrial function, you got threshold, you gotta get those lactates down, you got VO2 max. All that stuff. I may have made it sound like science is the end-all be-all, but science isn't the whole picture. Just because science says something works doesn't always mean it works in real life. That is where a lot of runners trip up in their training. Does that mean you shouldn't trust science? Of course not. Science is real, and training via a science-backed training program is definitely going to get you places. Science has most definitely guided the development of training in long-distance runners in the overall history. Science is guiding of the many training principles that we live or die by today. But just because something works for someone or multiple someones, it doesn't mean that it's going to work for you. Just because science tells you that a specific method of training is proven, doesn't always mean that if you put it into practice, that it's going to breed the best results for you. We are all individuals, and at least for right now, no matter how studies are conducted in the world of scientific literature, there is a difference between science and real-world application. Running goes beyond just following numbers and scientific data. It's really that simple. And I'll give you an example. I'm not calling anybody out at all, but there have been numerous studies that say that polarized training, meaning 80% of your training is at low intensity, very little is at moderate intensity, and the other 20% is at high intensity. There have been numerous studies that type of training is, superior to all other types of training. Now, of course, there are studies that contradict that, meaning like saying pyramidal training is superior to polarized training. But for the most part, there have been many contradictory studies, and like people are like, oh my gosh, you need to do polarized or pyramidal, and there's almost blah, 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 blah. But for the most part, let's say you went out in the field, you went out to interview the coach of a group of pro runners. Let's say you interviewed Dathan Ritzenhain, former American Olympian and coach of OAC, On Athletics Club. If you went out and interviewed him, chances are he wouldn't be like, oh yeah, we're doing polarized training. Oh yeah, we're doing pyramidal training. Oh yeah, we're just pure pyramidal here. Here's the thing. The coaches and the athletes of pro running teams, they are not making conscious efforts to go by certain proportions in their training. They are not making a program based off of just purely science guide their training. They are doing training that works best for the athletes on the team. They're doing stuff that works best for them. Yeah, they are using science somewhat to design the training and intensities somewhat, but it really comes down to individuality. The reason OAC has been so successful over the past year or two is that they have found training that works best for the individual athlete. They have found a formula that has been able to be proven to work best for every athlete on the team. They have not found a formula that works best for every athlete, but they have found a system that they can modify that works best for every athlete. They have found a way to personalize training in a way that they can use the basic outline of their training principles, but they can adapt it to each individual runner. And the reason I say that is because if polarized training was the holy grail of training proportions, meaning that, you know, polarized training, it's the only way that people should train. If you're not doing polarized, then who are you? You know, you're going to be down, like, you're never going to be good if you're not doing polarized training. If that was the only way to train, then what would happen is, if you looked at the training of OAC, if you looked at the training of Jakob Ingebrigtsen, and if you compared those guys to polarized training, all the physiologists, everybody would just think it's all wrong. They're doing it all wrong. Like, you know, like Ingebrigtsen, he must be injured all the time. You know, he must be like a really bad runner. OAC must be a flop, you know? Like, if polarized training was like the live or die, then like what? Like, no, nothing else would be like successful. But the thing is, with the training of the Ingebrigtsens, with the training of OAC, and many other of these pro runners, pro running establishments, despite the fact that they have not been using polarized training, they have been wildly successful. Despite the fact that there is less science supporting their training models as opposed to there's more science supporting polarized, despite that fact, they have had arguably more successful than anybody who has ever used like polarized training. And I guess what I'm trying to say here is that while there are fundamental principles that everyone must abide by to be a successful runner, you know, principles that all experts will agree on, even though that stuff exists, there is more than one right way to train, and training is ever evolving. But I also think that, you know, when you look at the scientific literature and all of that stuff, there can just be like too many voices and opinions. And obviously, if you're like me and you listen to all of those voices and opinions, it can lead to confusion and lacking, you know, your own trust and judgment. You're following some form of training that is claimed to be revolutionary, yet for you, it's not working. But because you've just been so religious to the scientific literature, to the voices and opinions on the internet, you just keep digging away even though you know it's not working for you as an individual. You're not getting anywhere with the training. For example, you know, before I got super deep into the scientific literature, into like my heart rate training, my zone 2, all of that stuff, I was training for a half marathon this past January, February, March, and April, and I used to do these hard long runs training for the half marathon, and I mean hard, at least for me. My peak long run was a 13 miler on a dirt trail. My first mile was like 6:50, but from there I was rolling like 7:20s the entire run, and the last mile I rolled like a 6:22. The point is, I was out on the trail to work. I was not out there to follow science. I found that over the course of many of these long runs, I was getting fitter and fitter despite the fact that I didn't, you know, care about heart rate. I didn't care about science. Yet I just found that even though I was doing these long runs without science, I was just getting fitter and fitter. I remember thinking to myself, well dang, if I just do these hard long runs all the time, I could be as fit as ever. And, you know, if, you know, we had a physiologist come to my house and, like, look at my training and look at those long runs, and he compared those to, like, scientific literature, he'd be like, well, Nicholas, like, why are you doing that? That's, like, super counterproductive. Even my Garmin said that the long runs were not very effective, even though they were, because week after week, I was just getting faster and faster. My peak workout was, like, 6 by mile at half marathon pace, which was, like, 6:10, and I was, like, barely breathing. Boom, I was able to knock them out like they were nothing. And today, because of my struggles, I can't even like knock out 6:10 like for a 5K. Like that's crazy. And so in hindsight, you know, I did get sick the week of my half marathon and I did have to withdraw. And yeah, that was pretty sad. The entire final week was miserable, like the sickness and all. And at the time, I thought it was just due to overtraining, you know, maybe I overcooked the body, but looking back, it was just that I was not mentally ready for the race. I was kind of stressed out. I wasn't mentally ready. And so because of that, I felt like my immune system was not working at its full capacity. And so I was very susceptible to a virus, which is exactly what happened to me. And so the next training cycle, what started happening was because of my hypothesis that I was overtraining. I started using Zone 2 a lot. You know, I started getting the heart rate monitor, the chest strap in the mail. I was doing Zone 2 threshold all the time. And then while in the meantime, I mixed in some speed work every once in a while. I bought that heart rate strap, which, you know, I don't regret buying, by the way. You should buy a heart rate chest strap. It's a great way to track intensity. And if you do want to get better at running, you probably should buy something like that. But my thinking was, well, if I can control intensity so religiously and make sure that I'm always in the correct zone, then I should be able to train years on end without injury, right? And you know, that is a valid claim because most people overcook themselves in training. But the thing was, the once brilliant hard long runs that I used to do to build great amounts of fitness, they were now replaced with long runs where the heart rate couldn't even get above 165. If the heart rate got above 165, then I had to slow down. It was that simple. I was taking away the thing that built the most fitness possible for me. And, you know, this wasn't a bad idea initially. Like I said, if I can control intensity religiously, then I will always be able to fight another day. But the training itself was not super effective. Because while I was able to get the heart rates really low, it didn't really translate amazingly to race scenarios. Not only that, but the progress was pretty slow. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, what I was doing was a great job of building base fitness, but I was not maximizing the amount of fitness that I could have built. I was reading all of this stuff on low heart rate training, and I guess I kind of just lost sight of what really worked. I stopped thinking for myself. And what I learned from all of this is that you really have to start silencing external opinions, and you have to really start trusting your own instincts and ambitions. I'm not saying don't learn more about the sport of running. I always think you should look for ways to improve your running. What I am saying is that you should have some balance. I'll give you an example. There's this guy, his name is Steven Skolian. He's not a more popular runner. He's not very popular, but you know, he is a 209 marathoner. He's an Irish Olympian from Tokyo, and he's been documenting his training from the Paris Olympics this past year, hopefully to run 208.10 for the marathon to qualify. And when Steven ran that 209 marathon in 2020 at the London Marathon, he was doing hard training. In his eyes, every run was hard, whether it was the intensity of the runs, the mileage, or the terrain that he ran on. When he was training with Mo Farah, Andy Buchar, and, you know, Bashir Abdi, that is when he found to build the best fitness, or to maximize his fitness gains. That is how he ran 209 in London. But if you would have shown the physiologist his training, they would have torn it apart. They would have been like, Steven, you're toast. Like, what are you doing, my guy? Like, why are you doing this hard training? It's not going to help you. You know, it probably would have looked atrocious just because of how hard he was working with no rest and, you know, the types of training that he was doing. But the thing is, the training that he was doing, it worked best for him. The harder Steven pushed himself, the faster he got. Which, in his eyes, most of the experts in the running space, is the exact opposite of how someone should train. You know, a lot of people think, oh, you know, easy days you should train easy, hard days you should train hard. You know, that's a training principle that even I abide by. And that's what most people would abide by. But in Steven's eyes, you know, in Steven's head, in Steven's body, you know, you need to train hard most days, and that works best for him. Now, you know, that worked for him in 2020. Fast forward to, let's just say, late 2022. From about the end of last year until September, Steven did highly intensity controlled training. He was doing a lot of zone 2, he was doing threshold all the time, he was doing all of his sessions highly controlled all of the time. And you know what? That type of training has been proven to work. Just look at Jakob Minkebrixen and all of those guys. Doing highly intensity controlled training has been shown to skyrocket your running fitness because of doing, you know, threshold all the time and all that stuff. And so Steven jumped on that bandwagon. And at first, it seemed like it was working. You know, Steven talked all about how his lactate levels were getting lower and his threshold was in the best place that it had ever been before. But you see, Steven was starting to reach a plateau. He hadn't been building up huge amounts of fitness. It was very, very slow progress. Now, you know, slow progress is still progress, but the progress for him was only coming physiologically, and it was coming at much slower rates than it was in 2020 when he ran 209 in London. But this training did not help the highly intensity controlled training, that, while it did help him physiologically, it did not help him psychologically. It hurt him. See, Steven has always prided himself on being psychologically tough. He's always prided himself on that being his biggest asset. In the middle of races, he could tear his competitors to pieces and hurt more than anybody else. He was an animal. But because of all of this highly intensity controlled training, he lost his edge psychologically. Because with the intensity control training, it is all about taking a step back and tiptoeing around your training. If something feels harder than it should be, well, then you should probably take a day off. You know, you must back off if it feels harder than it should be. And because of this highly intensity controlled training, meaning that, you know, you should back off a little bit, Steven feels that it made him feel a bit soft a little bit. Because it revolved around the premise of slowing down, so it made him soft. It made him psychologically just make him take a step back all the time. Instead of being like, oh yeah, let's grind today. You know, the premise of the training is, oh, if you're not feeling it today, you know, let's back off and, you know, let's just go get a pizza and watch the game with the boys. And, you know, that type of training, it has been working, you know, all the threshold, the high mileage, you know, like I said, Ingebrigtsen has made that work. But for Steven, because of that training, he started to make it so when things got tough, he couldn't stay in there. Not only that, but he felt this type of training, it only built good base fitness, but it couldn't account for specificity in the suffering that comes with racing. And so, you know, Steven decided to change his training. And then in the last 5 weeks, as of October 20th of 2023, Steven went back to what he was doing in 2020. He was doing hard training. He did it with Andy Butchart and Bashir Abdi. And, you know, maybe, for example, a day when he may have needed an easy day, he reminded himself that he was an animal. And instead of running easy, he ran steady. And he said that most of his runs have never gone slower than 6:10 pace in the last, like, 5 weeks. He was hitting the gym twice or three times a week. And since he was running with Andy Butchart and Bashir Abdi, guys who are much fitter than him, a lot of his sessions, he was just trying to keep up. And because of that, a lot of his sessions was running VO2 max when he was supposed to be running like threshold, for example. And, you know, VO2 max, if you know anything about marathon training, you know that most marathon coaches would never ever prescribe VO2 max sessions. But because Steven was doing a lot of these VO2 max sessions, because Steven was pushing himself really hard, recently, he has been in the best place physiologically and psychologically this whole cycle. And that's only been with 5 weeks of solid training. And so, you know, with the Dublin Marathon coming up pretty soon, Steven is in a great place. And with Steven's story and everything, the big lesson here is that everybody is different in terms of what they respond to best in the sport of distance running. Just because Steven was running hard every day and pushing himself constantly, does that mean you should do this? Of course not. Most people would get injured if they did that. Likewise, just because someone said that polarized training is superior, does that mean that it works best for you? No. Me personally, with my long run dilemma, in the future, maybe I don't have to do zone 2 for the full long run. Maybe I can just let myself loose the latter half and go a little bit harder. Because that is where the fitness is made for me personally. See, it's all about balance. I'm going to combine science, which would tell you to stick to zone 2, with real-world application, which would say to go hard. So if I was doing a 90-minute long run, which I might, you know, I might do 45 minutes in zone 2, which would be science, but then the second half, the last 45 minutes, I would go harder, because that is where I know that the fitness is made for me personally. That right there, that balances using science with taking a step back for injury prevention purposes, while at the same time going hard and not being afraid to attack training and grab it by the bullhorns. But what it really all comes down to is just using your brain and using your intuition. So often these days, whether that be in running or whatever else is going on in your life, we are swayed by the public opinion. We are told not to do things or take risks because they have consequences. Sometimes we have to turn off the phone, get off social media, stop caring about what other people think, and start using your own judgment and experimentation to find what works best for you. Otherwise, you will never reach your potential and you will be a slave to what other people are talking about. Again, this does not mean that you shouldn't abide by concrete training principles. You know, we should always be learning more about training. We should always be looking to make our running better because, as Jason Fitzgerald, host of the Strength Running Podcast, says, knowledge is a competitive advantage. But we should be using a combination of our own judgment and intuition, as well as concrete scientific principles, to find what works best for every single runner as an individual. It's all about balance. The best results in running are found by training in a way that works best for you. Thank you for listening to episode 49 of the Sunday Shakeout. I hope you all really enjoyed this episode. It was hopefully pretty insightful. You know, I think that a lot of times in running, we get so caught up in all of this information. There's so much information online that can get really thrown at you. And even if it is really good information, you know, like I do think that, you know, all the information that I promote on my podcast is pretty helpful. Even if that is true, like a lot of the times it's just like, it's can be a little overwhelming. And a lot of times we stop using our own brains and we start just letting other external things influence the way we do things. And so today's episode, you know, I'm by no means running out of content, okay? But today's episode, I kind of just wanted to give like a call to action, kind of just like what we need to be doing as runners, because a lot of times our job just needs to be to go execute and find what works best for us. And a lot of times we lose sight of that. We start getting into the numbers, the scientific data. And while that all is very important, running just goes beyond following the numbers and the scientific data. So that is really key. If you enjoyed this episode of the Sunday Shakeout, please consider following or subscribing to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I would also greatly appreciate a review in Apple Music, Spotify, or anywhere else you find your podcasts. If you have any questions regarding anything running, please feel free to reach out to me at thesundayshakeout@gmail.com, and I will get back to you as soon as possible. You know, thank you so much to all my listeners for the support and all the participation in the polls. You guys really make it all work, and you all give me some feedback, some suggestions. So, yeah, thank you so much, and you know, hope you all really enjoy your weekend, the rest of your week, or whatever, and peace out. This is the Sunday Shakeout.